Oftentimes in the reality-based combatives world, we throw around the words life or death in relation to the seriousness of the threat that you may face in a violent attack and as reinforcement of the need to prevent your own death. But what about the prospect of you having to take a life in order to save one, that being your own, be it your own or someone else that you love or that you have to protect? Could you do it? Should you do it? And how do you do it? These are tough questions that deserve no-nonsense responses, and that's exactly what we're going to be taking on in this special ISCQC survival training session. Hello, everyone. This is Jeff Anderson, president of the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants, and with me this session is someone who has specifically developed training dedicated to just this topic. And he's a perfect expert to have joining with us. Please join me in welcoming Damian Ross to the program. Damian, thanks for taking this time out today, man.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff. I appreciate it.
I always love having you on. Now, listen, everybody. Damian is a fourth-degree black belt in, I always screw this up, Tekken Ryu Combat Jiu-Jitsu, a second-degree black belt, and all of these could have changed. God, it's been a while since I've even talked to you about where
it's
you've gone.
It's all good. It's all good.
Okay. In Kokkudan Judo and a second-degree black belt in Taekwondo. But besides his traditional training in martial arts, Damian was a college and hometown Hall of Fame wrestler, and this background has given him a unique perspective also in his reality-based combatives training. Now, in this transition to a more combatives approach, his training has been rapidly catching the eye of several government agencies for its effectiveness, and he served as a consultant instructor to departments like the United States Secret Service, the United States Federal Marshals, and the United States Postal Inspectors, just to name a few. His self-defense training is currently being implemented by instructors and commanders in the United States Marine Corps, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the United States Army Combatives Training Centers, and he's developed an incredible train-at-home program that's developed a global network on self-defense company training centers, professional instructors, and trainers. In fact, you can check out his first training package, the very same training package that includes information that we're going to be covering in this session, at his website. So you need to go to www.selfdefensetrainingsystem.com. Now, Damian, this is a really unique topic. We've never really covered this before specifically as a topic with quick kills. If you have to take a life, how do you do it? Why do you do it? Should you do it? And these things. And the fact is that I've been through lots of different traditional martial arts schools, and I can't ever remember the concept ever coming up about taking a life. It's never been brought up. It's talking about, you know, life or death for yourself, and we just kind of throw it around kind of haphazardly. You have an entire DVD that's dedicated to this topic specifically. You have 12 different training modules with your program. You have one that's called Quick Kills. Let me ask you, why did you feel it was necessary to focus on this topic within your training modules?
Well, any exploration in self-defense, I feel, needs this topic covered. I mean, let's face it, this is what we're talking about. At the end of the day, it's funny, you mentioned traditional martial arts. Really traditional old-school karate was all about killing. I mean, Ikken Hitsatsu, you know, the Japanese terminology for one strike, one kill, that was it. And these guys weren't messing around. It wasn't until, you know, the 70s and the 80s when they started, you know, turning it into more kid family friendly type stuff where sparring was involved. But before that, there was none of that. And the training was Spartan at best. Of course, they didn't make any money at it. So, you know, the rest is history. But when we're talking about why this topic was covered, I mean, in order to completely... you know, round out the training and education, we felt it was completely necessary to make these methods available. And there are methods that were used. I know we talked about combatives, combat also from combat grappling, from the jiu-jitsu, and some of the other, you know, lesser-known types of, quick-killing techniques. Again, it's a complete series. It's a complete training program, and it's out there. I mean, I'm not holding anything back with this stuff. And you know, by the time you get to these modules, and by the time that you go through it, the responsibility. I mean, it's information, and it rounds out the program. The only difference between a lot of these and some of the techniques from the beginning modules is that you're not necessarily waiting for an attack to happen. I mean, you know that something has to get done, and it has to be ended as quickly as possible. So this is what you do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, some people forget that martial arts, and I think when we use the term martial arts now, it's had decades now of watering down to what it originally started out as, which were true combat arts, when it really was life or death. And so, you know, just like we throw around the words life or death, I think we throw around the words martial arts as if, you know, nowadays that they're completely worthless and there's just no practicality to them. So where you draw from, do you draw from the elements of the martial arts? I mean, you've taken several different martial arts. I know you've also done extensive studying in true, like, you know, combatives, World War II combatives,
you know,
real life death combatives.
To speak completely candidly, it is from both sides of the, let's just say, the military and non-military civilian and or criminal world where some of this stuff comes from, where, you know, it's just really simple. This is how we had to, this is how certain people in certain aspects of life would apply these methods to, you know, stop somebody.
Bad stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to put it as gingerly as possible.
No, there's no gingerly on this.
You know, what the hell? Okay, so let's face it. Let's face it, man. Some of the, some of my mentors have spent time, you know, on either side of the law. So we've had the opportunity through the people that I've met that would, you know, it's not like if, you know, it's funny because you, I mean, okay, we're in New Jersey, Sopranos, I'll throw a cliche out here, but. You know, there are certain methods that were documented and studied that would be used to end somebody. But now let's get one thing clear. I mean, the empty hand methods, we all have to admit, are the least efficient methods of taking a life. And let's face it. I mean, we've got a plethora of small arms and edged weapons that will do the trick. You know, it's funny that people are like, how can you teach this? I'm like, if somebody really morally wanted or immorally wanted to end somebody's life, there's a hell of a lot easier ways to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
but you
bring up
another good point as far as, you know, getting back to the original question, which was, you know, why dedicate anything to this? You know, the reason why we nowadays, especially in reality-based training, we throw around the words life or death is because the people that you might be coming up against don't have the same kind of framework that we do, that, you know, why we've watered down martial arts to make it more palatable to people who pretty much just go to their cubicle job, come home, kiss the kids on the forehead, good night, you know, have dinner with the family. The people that we're going to have to most likely deal with if we were attacked are people that were perhaps in prison where, you know, going and your evening meal meant you could die.
Yeah.
A fight that starts out, you don't expect it to be just like a high school pushing match. You expect that, you know, you're going to get attacked either then or later on or whatever, and it could be life or death.
This is the way it was explained to me. No matter how hard a guy was behind the wall, all right, if he felt that he was going to get hurt or injured, he would think twice. So what we need to do when we're training, I know I'm kind of maybe skipping ahead a little bit, but as soon as you come onto that training system site, we have, like, you will be feared there. I mean, you've got to adopt a certain attitude and a certain mentality in your training that, you know, you may have to, or you have to be willing to go to that point if you want to be the last one standing. That's it. That's a fact. You know, I'd like to be the guy to tell you, you know what, you don't have to do that. Listen, you know, you can protect yourself and not worry about doing any harm to anybody. You know, we're not sociopaths, right? We are, you know, this is a difficult situation that requires a simple yet extremely difficult solution. And you've got to be willing right now to do it. If not, your success rate's going to be low. You know,
yeah.
you have to have that attitude. That's it.
Well, let's talk about this. I know a lot of times when we put up kind of what-if scenarios for our members and we talk about news stories and things like that, I can tell you that our members are seriously into the legal ramifications. Now, we have a lot of law enforcement that are members of our programs and things like that. So I know they have to always think about kind of the legal ramifications of every time they come in contact with somebody. So, you know, let's talk about that. I mean, when is somebody legally justified to take a life?
Okay, again, the old disclaimer, I am not an attorney, check your local laws, all that other stuff. You're never legally justified to necessarily take a life. You are legally justified to defend yourself to the extent that, you know, you feel the threat has stopped. What that point is entirely up to you. I will tell you this, the people that I train in law enforcement, when it comes down to it, and I'll speak freely, when the shit hits the fan, they don't care about the legal ramifications. They care about surviving, period. They want to get home. All right. Now, I know we like to put things in a way where, well, if I want to frame my actions around, you know, around what the legal framework is. I mean, the fact is, when it happens, you got to just end it as fast as possible, period. And you're legally justified to do that.
So it really comes down to you being able to be able to explain. I mean, if we assume, even if it was legal, even if you were justified, chances are you're probably still going to be on trial or have to answer
absolutely
for it, or, you know,
absolutely
call out the, you know, at least fill out the report at least,
yeah,
you know.
Write the report, make sure how it looks on camera, you know, and there's definitely ways of doing that, how you're going to approach somebody. Your hands are going to be a particular position. They're going to be up. They're going to be facing them. It's going to be, you're going to be talking to them. And then when things happen, it's like you don't even have to close your fist. It doesn't look like a punch. You know, that is what is going to be, then you'll just have to explain your actions. Hey, if you're justified and you're in the right, you'll be able to explain your actions. But even if you're right, you're still going to have to go down that legal road no matter what. You know, as soon as you decide to use force, no matter who you are.
Well, and you bring up something interesting. So, I mean, I'm not sure if you meant it this way or not, but
probably not. But
you know, when you said, you know, it doesn't, when the strike comes out, it doesn't look like, you know, like there's a difference if you have witnesses and other people are contributing to this report. There's a difference between let's say a punch or a certain strike that you throw out that kills somebody versus you know somebody being down on the ground or you grabbing a manhole cover and smashing their head with it.
Which is completely effective.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to kill him. I punched him versus you can't really get away with oops, I'm sorry, I went and picked up a manhole cover and dropped it on his head.
Yeah, once you start, I mean, there's definitely the point of no return. Like if you've got a downed opponent, and I'm going to tell you this right now, there's not a martial arts school in the land that doesn't train people to hit guys when they're on the ground during self-defense techniques. Not one. You know, you always see they'll come in and they'll try to finish with a reverse punch or something like that. So, you know, these guys that will criticize at the same time train in that manner. But getting back to the original point, you've got somebody who's down and incapacitated, that's it. They're done. Continuing after the fact, that's when you start to get into trouble.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're, you know, doing certain, I mean, there's certain things that we do in this module with, you know, striking, you know, the neck area, striking the throat with an open hand type of technique, even getting into after the submission, you know, like a strangle submission following up with a neck dislocation, you know, they're still in grappling scenarios, you know.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't give that general appearance. And don't get me wrong, we even get into, if the guy is down, putting the boots to him in the correct manner, because again, it is a complete study of the most fastest effective ways to empty hand situations to, you know, take a life.
Right. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, I think we might get back into legal stuff a little bit later, because I think it's important, and I want to come back to this where, you know, perhaps, like, if what happens after you do take a life, what are some of the things that you need to be able to, when you're filling out that report, you need to be able to consider. But you say on your website regarding this module that you have on quick kills, you say that there are three ways that people can die. Can you explain a little bit more what you mean by that?
Yes. It's really simple. There are only three unnatural ways people die, which is asphyxiation, blunt force trauma, and loss of blood. That's it. So the three, you know, everything you do has got to cause that type of trauma to the human body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's it. I mean, let's look at, you know, any action, you know, after action report, or heck, even car accident reports, you know, ask an EMT, you know, that's it. And it's as simple as that. And the training in the module teaches you how to effectively cause those three things to happen as fast as possible.
Hmm. Well, let me tell you something. I mean, I think that we're going to get in some of the things, ways to do that. We're going to talk about some of the techniques and everything, everybody out there. So,
sure.
So don't worry, we're going to get in some of the technical stuff. But I think even more than the technical stuff, and I know this from experience, and I think anybody can, even if you haven't experienced this, you can pretty much look at what's happening to soldiers that are coming from overseas. Now, it's a little bit, well, not even a little bit, it's quite a bit of a difference there in being able to, you know, being in life or death situations every single day. But what it takes to be mentally prepared to be able to take a life is a lot different than I think what a lot of people think. I mean, if anybody's ever been in the military and actually been in combat, even just pulling the trigger takes a lot of mental focus when you know that it's not just paper targets that you're shooting at anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that when you pull a trigger, you're actually taking somebody's life. And, you know, we've seen this before where you can see police videos where a police officer should have shot somebody. You know, they had the gun out, the person had a knife, they told him to stop, the guy with the knife didn't stop, he kept coming in, but the police officer couldn't pull that trigger.
Yep.
It takes a lot to be able
Absolutely.
To do that. And I think, you know, a lot of people talk a lot of smack. You know, they talk shit about, you know, I would blow that guy away, or I would, you know, do whatever it takes. But how do you develop this sort of a...
The only way that's been proven to do that is with stress inoculation and programming. Really, that is, you know, training with... We do a lot of dummy training, you know, with either a Bob or, you know, a Sparpro or whatever. Mm-hmm. And at least, you know, you're training yourself in a manner that is just 100% full out, attack the target through a specific series of, let's just call them combinations. But after that, you know, it's really, you know, there are no guarantees, and you don't know, you know, for the most part until you get there. The best way, though, is just trying to really, you know, throw these words around, but, you know, dehumanize your target and train so that when the switch is flipped, you're going 100%. That's the best, most successful way that we've discovered to make it happen. What happens a lot of times with partner training is, while in some aspects it's good to kind of get the feel of another, you know, working with a living, breathing, you know, body,
yeah.
But for the most part, we limit it because you start to, you know, you start to pull your techniques. You start to worry about hurting the other person, which is completely natural. You really don't want to. I mean, you'll see people, you know, working and training, and you know, you don't want to hit the guy, and you shouldn't want to hit the guy. So you must remove yourself from that and program your muscle memory to, you know, just fire on all cylinders when it's time to go.
Well, it seems like the Bob is especially useful then. I know you use it a lot. I mean, gosh, you even have it in pictures
yeah.
of it in all your videos and stuff like that. Because it does, it at least looks like a person. It looks realistic, but you can do lethal blows on it.
Yes. I mean, you'll tear the hell out of that thing in training. I mean, we
yeah.
do everything with, you know, wrap it up in cardboard and stab it. You know, I mean, we use it a lot. I mean, you want to... I mean, I like it. In fact, you know, I'm actually messing around with another dummy that's coming in this week to see if maybe we can come up with a better mousetrap with that. But, you know, that's, you know, the best way that you find this, even the simulating with the FATS program, you know, with law enforcement and the military using that for the firearms, and, you know, at least putting yourself in that scenario where you're, you know, it kind of, the targets are more real as opposed to hitting pads, again, even as opposed to hitting, you know, again, working with that training partner. We found that, you know, especially you'll see this with guys who spar a lot, you know, point spar a lot. You know, when they transitioned over to full contact, it became a little difficult, extremely difficult, because none of their, you know, they're not used to striking. You know, they're not used to really hitting. They're always used to going to the surface and stopping. So you really need to train in that manner where it is just, you know, as soon as you're going, you got something that looks vaguely human that you're hitting. And that's it.
Are there any other alternatives? Because, I mean, not everybody's going to go out and buy a couple $100, you know, Bob training dummy or anything. Are there
You need something to hit. That's it. You know, if you have a heavy bag, if you get creative and decide to build, you know, go down to Home Depot and start putting something together with which we've done with, you know, black iron pipe and, you know, some foam. Yeah, absolutely, you can do it. But, you know, if you're real, you got to hit something. You got to train with something. And the more it looks like a human being, the better it's going to be for you.
Yeah. Yeah. What about, I mean, is visualization a big thing? Do you use scenario-based training in the training
yes.
that you do?
Yes. It is, you know, when you're getting into that mindset to do it, I mean, this is why you're training when you're going all out. You know, you're working on getting exhausted. You know, we go for time, you know, we do time interval training. You know, if you do have the resources, like the Hogan's Alley type thing is still good stuff. I mean, we enjoy it. I mean, we developed a program, the self-defense training system. It's kind of like, you know, it's like P90X for self-defense. It's, you know, it's designed to be able to do it at home alone. If you add other people in your training, the problem that I found with some of the, if you do like, because we've used Red Man suits and the other types of training
yeah.
apparatus, they really don't protect too well. So it's, you know, you get hit with that thing with an edge of hand to the side of the head, or even with a, you know, it hurts. So, you know, they're okay to a point, and any of that it's all supplemental to the core training that's in the videos, which is just, or in the program, which is just, you know, there's your target, destroy your target. You know, any questions?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the technicalities of this. I mean, what are, when it comes to having, you know, being forced to be able to take somebody's life very, very quickly, what are the best targets on the human body that will cause a fast lethal blow?
I mean, right off the bat, anywhere from the neck up, you're looking at the throat, the back of the neck, the side of the neck, the base of the skull. Temple gets a little bit more difficult, but still excellent. Striking the striking the skull hard enough. Once you get away from the temple and the neck throat area, the power that you need to generate becomes significantly greater. When you're going down to the body, if you're gonna, you know, I don't know if you've heard of this. Like kids have been getting. It seems it's bizarre. This last year, we had two kids in the area get hit with a foul ball in the chest, started
yeah.
an arrhythmia. You know, training the fist to hit the body, again, lower percentage type of technique, only because it needs to be trained more. So we start with the methods that need to be trained the least and have the most effectiveness, down to the ones that can be trained that do work but are less effective. But even, you know, with the specific methods to the throat, you know, like with the web of hand blow, the edge of hand blow, are excellent types of techniques. Even coming in with the web of hand blow to the throat and securing the back of the head, you know, crushing the esophagus.
Let's take each one of them, because you said there are three ways, non-natural ways for, you know, to take a life. Sure. Let's start with that. It looks like we're talking about the throat as being one. So asphyxiation.
Well, that would be
asphyxiation. Three, which is the fastest way to take somebody's
blood?
Well,
without, again, like the loss of blood, that's really specifically for, you know, edge weapons and firearms.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it's hard to. You're going to wait a long time when you give somebody a bloody nose to.
You know, you can give, or like a couple paper cuts. maybe if you have a little lemon juice, you can.
Right.
Yeah. So, you're going into the, the asphyxiation, striking the throat. Honestly, the fastest way is blunt force trauma to the side of the back of the neck. The hands down. If you hit him really hard, minimal, you're going to knock him out real easy. Hit him really hard, it's going to short circuit what's going on. You think of it, the neck is just the gateway from the brain to the body. You're gonna hit him hard enough that it's literally going to be lights out. Hit him really hard, you're going to dislocate the neck. So that would be the utmost fastest way. Next would be.
Well, you're saying like if you have a pipe, if you have a stick or something like that, the fastest way would be blunt force trauma. You have some sort of a weapon is going to be the fastest way.
Oh, you're
even
you can, no, not even empty hand. I'm talking edge of hand.
Okay.
Absolutely. Again, you're training this stuff, and you're getting your weight and your body behind it. It doesn't take a lot, and that's probably the most. People are using the edge of hand to the back of the neck, and it's been maligned so much from like Austin Powers on down. There's a reason why this.
Well, you use it a lot. I know. I mean, I watch your videos.
Oh, yeah.
I love your videos, and you use the edge of hand a lot.
All the time. I mean, and listen, don't get me wrong. I am a reverse punch guy. I got like two Makawaras in my barn. I train it a lot. I love it. Okay, but more bang for the buck. The edge of hand provides the cover. It can cut through everything. It's like a machete, man. I mean, you're just cutting down anything in its path, and I don't care. And your hands up, your arms up, whatever. Eventually, I'm gonna keep chopping away with that hatchet till I hit pay dirt.
And just everybody knows, we're talking about the traditional, like you said, like the Austin Powers karate chop type thing, which people typically. I think when you're 5 years old, you're taught the edge of hand blow just from watching cartoons.
Yeah, sure. But we do it in a way that doesn't look like freaking Austin Powers, right?
Right.
Our elbows up, that horizontal edge of hand, we're just hitting fast, hitting hard. And when you see it like that, you're like, holy crap, okay, I get it. And then, maneuvering this guy, just that blow to the back of the head is going to end it.
And for you people that are listening right now, you can go to Damien's website, and you'll see just from the demonstration videos that are on there for the disc, you'll see even when you get to the homepage there, him using this technique in a variety of different ways in some of the targets that we're talking about here. In multiple attacker type fights, you'll see him using it. So it's something that I've seen in all of his videos that is a very easy technique to be able to master, but it has to be done right. You can't do the Austin Powers hi-ya sort of a thing. You have to be able to do it right. And so I think if you go there, you'll be able to see more of a demonstration of it, too.
It's funny because, again, everybody's a critic on YouTube or whatever, and they'll be like, oh, you're hitting him in the shoulder. A lot of times I hit the guy in the shoulder because we're going really hard, and if I hit him in the back of the neck, we're going to have problems, and I've grown attached to my training partners and friends. So, you're going to see, it won't exactly. If I can pull it, great. But it's tough because the other problem is if you train in a particular manner, when you get to, when you get to doing these things with a partner, you wind up, things slip. You're not really training to control what you're doing. So getting back to, blunt force trauma is, the fastest. The second would be asphyxiation. So that would be working into, any of your, we do the strangles a little bit differently than a lot of the, see what you sport, where the strangles where we wind up indexing them is like right behind the, right behind the thumb where the wrist meets, instead of having that would come across the throat, instead of, you'll see like the elbow on the strangle arm by the chin, that takes way too long, and you'll wind up in those positions when you really can't get to your first position, which is, you know, that thumb right underneath the tip of your thumb, right underneath the ear, and the strangle behind it. Now you've got two options with this. You can continue to hold and strangle, which, you know, you think about it, which is way beyond the tap. You know, when you get somebody to tap, you know, that's just, they're not even, so most guys don't even start to go out yet. I mean, it's funny because, you know, when training in judo, I kind of, you know, so this way, we trained not to tap on a choke or to tap at least until your ear started ringing. So at least you know, you laugh because you know what I'm talking about. Because at least, you know, at least then you know, you know, how long it takes, how long you have to fight, right? And the guy strangling, he knows how long it really takes to strangle somebody who's fighting. And it is, again, it is beyond what people think, you know, when they tap, because most of the times they're tapping because they just feel the throat sore or they're not it's a little uncomfortable, they're gagging, you know, they'll tap at the gag reflex. We'll use the gag reflex with the asphyxiation triangles to get in deeper, and then if we continue to hold them there, which you'll be, you know, asphyxiating them, obviously, that'll take a couple minutes until after they're passed out. But now what we do on the tape is that every strangle in traditional combat jiu-jitsu is followed with a neck dislocation, which you set up in a way where you'll see that, you know, we go from like a rear naked strangle to the rear naked neck dislocation, which it actually comes up now. We're working on the jaw, and we have the body, we use the body weight in such a way that we dislocate the head from the top of the spine. And it would, you know, effectively, cut off all nerve connection from the head to the body, and they're done. Again, takes a lot more training, a little more time, but again, as part of this study of close quarters combat, you know, what would be traditionally done in these manners, that's what they did. If you think about it, there's really no other reason to strangle a guy and to get him to pass out in the battlefield if you're not going to, if you ran out of weapons to stab him with, you know, the samurai would, you know, look to finish you another way.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that makes sense that it would be easier to do that. I mean, I think we see in Hollywood people just come up and grab the head and spin it, and all of a sudden the guy's dead.
Yeah, that's like that's more of a chiropractor adjustment,
right?
A really bad chiropractor. Really bad. The body needs to be anchored, or you know, it can't move in order for the neck to be dislocated in that manner, and also, you know, you're taking into consideration that this is a live human being. Granted, you know, if you're coming up behind them and shocking them in a manner, you still have to, you literally have to have the shoulders pinned so the head can move. If it doesn't, the body's just naturally going to follow, because that's really what it's designed to do. It's kind of connected to the head.
Well, and if you're choking somebody out, when they're passed out,
they're done. Yes.
Well, and because they're not fighting you, then you don't
Correct.
Have that kind of resistance to be able to deal with, and it's like snap.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And then you're using in the training, you use the body weight to just maneuver it. And you're literally, and you could, you're doing this. If we train it on the dummy, and you can really just crank the snot out of it. And then when if you do it with a partner, they're going to feel it, and it's a really kind of a queasy feeling when you start feeling the neck dislocation come on,
mm-hmm.
because as soon as you're, from the we do it from the feet, or we do it from, you know, in the feet, actually the, from like a, let's say, all major chokes, front strangle or the guillotine, rear naked choke, rear Japanese strangle, sleeve heel strangle, which is a two, which is just a two-arm, forearm choke, all of those from standing and from the, you know, front or from the, you know, ground position or from the rear, you know, all those can, you know, be finished in a manner, even with the, even the collar chokes as well, that, you know, you can just, and it's really, really simple. And it, you know, and it's just a matter of just shifting your line of pressure from the throat to across the jawline and then continuing the same motion on the strangle. So once you understand the strangle, you can execute the dislocation.
Yeah. Well, and so this brings up another question that I have. And by the way, everybody that's listening to this live right now, if you can we've had some questions submitted, and I've kind of gone through the questions, and I'm using these right now, and I'm talking to Damien. But if you're on the phone, you can actually join live. If you want to talk to us, if you want to join the conversation, all you have to do is press star 2 on your handset. Just press star 2, and that will raise your hand over here, and I'll unmute your phone, and you can join the conversation. If you are listening in via the web from anywhere in the world, you can just go ahead and type your question into the question submission box that's there, and that will come up on our console here, and we'll ask the question to Damien also. So, Damien, this brings up, I mean, because we talk about how a lot of fights go to the ground and that they start out standing up, but then people get into more of like a wrestling and grappling, and then all of a sudden it goes down, someone trips over something, and now you're wrestling around on the ground. And this is a very, very dangerous place to be. We know that, I mean, if you're on the ground and this person has buddies, if it's a multiple attacker situation, it's very easy to get stomped down there. So it seems that you really, I mean, if you have to employ some sort of lethal techniques, this is one of those areas. If we talk about how dangerous the ground really is to be,
yep.
Well, danger equals you could die just because people start stomping away at your head with their steel-toed boots. You can die by accident. You can die on purpose or whatever. So
yep.
This seems like an area where you do have to be prepared to be able to take somebody's life on the ground if you have to. So we talked about asphyxiation and choking. Are there other ways that, you know,
yeah.
Like you can still do this
you know, if you're going, you know, attacking the eyes, gouging the eyes, will cause shock and trauma enough to, in a lot of people, to cause them to go into cardiac arrest. And as the body goes into shock, that's it. You're over. The eye, you know, so we have the eyes, even grabbing and squeezing the testicles. Again, this is pretty simple, straightforward stuff, but something that I think needs to be, you know, looked on and mentioned because it can't be overlooked because it is effective and it does work. One of the things, it's like if you're a grappling guy and you're rolling around, there's very few positions where, you know, you can't get a hold of somebody's eyes or their testicles. You know, that could probably be in my epitaph. But, you know, and then, again, we've got the other strangles that we were talking about before. You know, but those types of scenarios, you brought up something which was excellent, which I agree with 110%. The best thing you could do on the ground is to get the hell off of it. If you are in a position, and we go through this with the entire... You know, if you're looking at Module 3, Ground Fighting for Keeps, you know, we address this scenario where, you know, you may be in a position where, you know, you would have to catch a rest. You can do something like with a reverse Japanese strangle. And as you're holding on to him, protecting yourself, locating the eye, taking the eye, you know, even biting, obviously, down in, you know, when anything's in front of your mouth. Again, it's a fight. It's not... You know, it's not clean. It's not pretty. This is, you know, do whatever the hell you can as fast and first, you know, before he does it to you. And, you know, it is, you know, you may want to, you know, you talk about, you know, getting stomped to death. I mean, we've been in situations where, you know, you have somebody on top of you, and you know what? I want to keep them on top of me at least for a little bit so I can figure out what the hell I'm going to do because, you know, let his buddies hit him a little bit. You know, while I'm, you know, protected here, you know, burying my head in his chest, which is, again, it is not the place where I want to be, but you wind up there, so you have to deal with it. and you do things to either end the fight or improve your position every time. That's it.
Yeah. Well, the you know, I'm thinking about this, and there's all the things that we've talked about have been, it seems like, a lot of the most effective things are from behind. I mean, we talk about choking out. You know, you don't see a lot of the same front chokes, which is like the first technique you ever learn in self-defense school, the front choke hold and how to get out of it. But, you know, there's, so we're talking about kind of the easiest choke is from behind to be able to get wrapped around their throat. We're talking about the side of the neck and the back of the neck. When somebody's in kind of like a stand-on position, so let's say somebody has a knife, they're holding you up or whatever, but they have a knife, and that makes it a life or death type of a scenario. Maybe you take your family with you, which makes it even more dangerous. What would be your go-to strike and target for a face-to-face fight if somebody felt like their life was in jeopardy?
If they are, I'll say dynamic or static. Dynamic is guys at a distance. Static is the guys, you know, in close.
I would say
eyeball
in close.
Eyeball.
We talk about close quarters combat. You know, I mean, if somebody is within the striking distance, not the kicking distance, but, you know, they're in striking distance,
mm-hmm.
And you feel like you can't get out of it, you can't talk the person down, maybe they look like a drug addict or something, and they're just, you know, so
well,
that's different the situation.
Sure, tactically, you know, one thing I should mention, that if you are with your family, because, you know, I've got one too, they know that if anything ever were to happen, they're supposed to leave immediately and not look back and call, okay, and, you know, again, please, you know, my wife would want to stay, but she knows that to go, get out, call immediately. Because at least at that point, they are, you know, they've got to, you know, make a decision, and you're staying and they're going. No matter what, it's just go. That being said, if I'm in close, and now if he's grabbing me, or because this is, we cover it again, this is, well, we look at, this is Module 8, Weapons Defense. If he's a few paces away from me, and again, it's going to depend on the situation. We train to, you know, get distance, because every time this has either happened, or we train this outside, or in, you know, an environment where, you know, you have a tendency not to just, you know, you don't want to, and it's difficult, and you have to practice this, to look to move around and use your environment. So when we're moving, you know, like one of the things we love is, you know, like it's the lion tamer chair, picking up a chair or like a garbage can or something and using it in a particular manner like you would a lion tamer, and just keeping it in the guy's face while you're jamming into him and running him over whatever debris or change of elevation he's going to hit. If I were stripped down, that being said, if I were stripped down and have anything, I'm in a room with four walls, nothing. You know, I'm going to distract him. I'm going to spit in his face. You know, I'm going to then close in the distance. It's just literally going to be hitting him and getting to him as fast as possible with the first technique that I have, which is either going to be like a heel or hand or a finger dart, anything to distract him so I can gain the momentum, close the distance, and finish him, which is going to be with strikes. Which, whether it's like, you know, and it's whatever presents itself. Again, if this guy has a weapon drawn on me, he's made a decision and he's ready to go. So, you know, it's literally distract him. Every self-defense scenario can come down to, you know, position, distance, momentum, and balance. Okay, so position, we're standing, distance, how far away he is from me. And then momentum and balance is like, I need to gain the momentum, and I'm going to take that in little bits and pieces. You know, it starts with that, you know, loogie into the face. Okay, he goes, I immediately follow up and start hitting him, attacking him, taking ground, keeping him off balance, and then as you're causing more injury to him, you know, continuing to attack. Primarily your focus is on the head, you know, above the neck, with the non-specific gross motor skill blows, which is specifically now we're talking about like the heel of hand and the edge of hand. And, you know, this is going to be, you know, and then it's whatever target presents itself. But, yeah, we're going for anything above the neck.
Yeah. Well, this
did that answer the question?
It did, yeah. I mean, gave lots of options. I want people to really understand kind of, you know, what I'm trying to get people to get to is and get out of this is if, number one, I want them to be able to determine when it is a life or death scenario where they're justified to be able to take a life. So that's one thing. And we talked about that. So it really comes down to what you have to be able to explain if/when you have to go to court.
Here's I'll let you in on a couple, you know, this is what you do, okay? Because this is what if you had to do this, and even if you had to defend yourself, and you were in a position where there's a high percentage of witnesses, or you're a good person, you know, obviously, so, you know, you want to do the right thing. The first thing you're going to do is you're going to call, you know, okay, I'm going to just be honest. You're going to call 911. You're going to say you've just been attacked and you're having chest pains. Okay, you are traumatized, which you probably will be anyway. So, you know, it's a good thing to assume. So now paramedics are going to come. You're going to be like, I really can't remember anything. I was attacked. I was fighting for my life. I can't breathe. I have chest pains. I don't know. You just want to start at this point justifying and building your case because you were fighting for your life. You don't walk off cool. You don't quote movie lines. You know, you are scared to death, which is, again, you probably will be if you are a, you know, law-abiding, upstanding citizen. So, you know, don't feel, let's not resist the temptation to seek medical help after a situation.
Right. Good point.
All right. So at that point, you are, you know, this is it. It's documented because now, you know, when your case finally goes to court, you know, heck, I forget what I had for breakfast a lot of times, right? So, you know, whatever witnesses, even with, you know, everyone's got a video phone now, forget it. But still, there's everything that can be. If you're in the right and you're protecting yourself and you are, you know, putting yourself in a non-threatening manner, you know, you could just, you know, anything can be explained. Anything can be explained.
Well, here's a question I have regarding this. Okay, so this is an interesting. I don't know if I know the answer to this question, but I think it's kind of it's interesting. Is that okay? So you have you've struck somebody to the back of the neck, and you know that from your training or from whatever that it could very well be a lethal blow. They're not done yet, or whatever they are. They're passed out. Do you try and revive them? Do you stay and try and get it, or do you leave the scene? Because, you know, to me, it's always going to be if you were in that type of situation, it's always going to be a dangerous situation. If you kill this person, or even if they're passed out, and you stay there to call 911, and all of a sudden their buddy comes out of the local, you know, Dunkin' Donuts and sees
you dialing
911.
Yeah, I don't want to cut you off, but I know. Listen, just like we said, we always assume he's got friends.
Yeah.
You know, and his friends could be sitting there looking at, holy shit, you know, Joey just got crushed, right? So this would be the same thing if you felt like, again, in your, you know, your survival, social chaos product. I mean, you know, you think someone's driving, you know, chasing you, you know, 911, go to the police station, right? You know, I mean, go find help. You know, don't wait around for the police. It's like 911. I don't know. I'm having chest pains. I need to, I need to get to. Again, let's say you're in a deserted area, or you're in a place where there's just a group of non-friendlies. Mm-hmm. Local. You know, you went down the wrong neighborhood, and now you just, you know, tuned up one of the local kids, and you've got problems. So it looks like, you know, after the Rodney King trial, right? So, I mean, you are, you know, you are alone. So, you know, it is literally, I've just been in a fight. I have chest pains, 911. I need to get to a hospital or police, and then you get the hell out of there. So it's there. There's a, you know, there's a record of it, and there's a reason why you've left and you look to do the right thing. I mean, reviving somebody, listen, you know, I mean, if you feel compelled to do this, but if your common sense tells you that this is not the time to do this, I can't, we talked about this before, anyone can't morally or ethically tell you when you should even, defend yourself or do anything. That's up to you. So if you feel compelled to want to, you know, revive somebody who's just trying to kill you, you know, God bless you, right? So that's, you know, fantastic. But, you know, tactically, it just might not be the best move for you, given the situation. And, you really got to trust your instincts. And to tell you the truth, it's best bet that, you know.
Best to leave.
Leave, man.
In my opinion, anyway. I mean, you're right. I know you're dancing around it. You don't want to offend
you know,
people are like, you know, I'm learning to kill you, and then I'm also taking first aid so I can save you.
Yeah, Jeff, you know, I mean, you know, there's guys out there thinking it, right?
I know.
And I'm like, you know, and I'm trying to be like, you know, and I'll be like, yeah, get the hell out of there. Come on, all right?
Yeah.
You know, leave them. I'm like, he didn't give a crap about you, whatever, you know, and, you know, dial 911, tell them there's somebody injured there, and let them go to that neighborhood.
Right.
Poor, you know, I mean, poor EMTs, but, you know.
Right.
It's like, that's it. And if you, you know, you feel you need to, you know, turn yourself in, and you know you're justified with your actions. Is you're really just reporting the assault, and, you know, and that's going to be, you know, they won't. Hey, listen, it looks a hell of a lot better, right? You doing that than
yes,
you know, the other than people finding you getting all, you know, like.
Well, and that's what I was going to bring up, because I think, you know, how we got into this was, okay, so, you know, when are you justified, but then how do you do it in order to be legal? So you do a couple of things there. I mean, I love your tips for when you make the call. I'm having chest pains. I'm going to the hospital. I need to get there. I was just in an attack. I just hurt somebody. I left him. He was unconscious. I don't know what his status is. He's at this location. I left because I was in fear for my life or whatever. But all those things that you're doing. So, number one, you're calling and you're at least saying, hey, there's somebody that's hurt that may need medical attention, is different than you just leaving somebody in the middle of the road or the parking lot, and like you said, letting the police come and find you because they found your, you know, whatever, your wallet that you left behind. So you tried to get the person medical attention. You are leaving the area because you feel in danger, that if you stayed, you felt like your life was in danger. If you stayed there, you were afraid that this person had other friends that were there. It was an attack that was perpetrated on you. So all those things seem to reinforce that when you're standing there in court, it's actually,
exactly,
you know, you had every justification to do what you did, and you did everything you could to make sure he didn't die, but unfortunately, he did.
Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, it was never your intent. It is always your intent to stop the threat and escape. You know, I tried to tell him to please leave me alone. I was scared. Even that opening edge of hand, I mean, not even the opening heel, like an opening heel of hand or even an edge of hand, it looks like you could that can be explained as a push. You know, I tried to push him off me, and he kept, you know, coming at me. So I really didn't know what to, you know, I just kept hitting him and attacking it, you know, and defending myself and telling
right.
him not to stop. And then he went down and I left.
Right.
You know, and I was in
yeah.
shock. And I really don't, you know, and even to the point where I really don't remember what happened, because after this, I blacked out.
Yeah.
You know, and which, to tell you the truth, happens a lot, where you will go, and this is why, you know, it's important with your training to, you know, to program that, you know, those gross motor skills, you know, in you correctly. because you really don't know what's going to come out with you when you're stressed in these situations. So, you know, that's why it's just, you know, to wire yourself in a, you know, literally on autopilot, you know, once it goes. Because sometimes, like, when we get, you know, I know we're getting a little off topic, which is, hey, story of my life. When, you know, we start getting into the more complex movements, they wind up coming out like, you know, look almost like little just, you know, twitches or brain farts, for lack of a better term, that, you know, when in reality, you know, you just got to keep it simple. You know, you got to be, you know, as fast and as powerful as possible, and, you know, learn to, you know, harness that natural adrenaline rush that's happening to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we talked about the legalities. We talked about some of these things. We talked about a lot of the techniques. The two blows that you like very much for this are the heel palm and the edge of hand. Very, very effective. Very very powerful gross motor skills that can be used pretty practically on any target. The targets that we talked about specifically that can create lethal trauma are things that some people probably already know, such as the throat. Or maybe the back of the neck. I think maybe that some people kind of consider that more of like a, maybe they didn't realize it was that lethal. But
you know,
you also bring up.
Let's put it this way. There's no secret death touch.
Well, that's where I'm going next.
You know.
So don't steal my thunder yet. I got a few little fingers for you. But so you brought up some ones that I think a lot of people wouldn't normally think of as potentially lethal that I think are very important. So things like the eye gouge and testicles can create enough trauma in the body, like you said, that could possibly cause a heart attack or things like that. In any case, they're going to stop the fight regardless. But they could potentially be lethal. So I think people really, that's a new one. I think it's very important people understand that, especially if you're in like a ground fighting situation, because you're not going to potentially get those powerful strikes in. But if you can reach the testicles, if you can reach the eyes, there is still an opportunity there for you to do some intense trauma. So now what I want to talk about are some of the ones that people maybe or normally think that are capable of producing death, which may be more myths. So the first one I talk about is the ninja death touch. So, you know, there are systems out there that talk about this. There are legends of the ninja being able to do dim mak and death touch and these things. So let's talk about some of the myths that are out there and, you know, true fact, or are they myths, or what are they? So let's start with the ninja death touch.
When you're talking about...
you know what, let me just call it the death touch, because I know I have ninjas
touch
out there who are going to... I know they're going to be in their black pajamas, like I'm going to be
hovering
on my ceiling
tonight. I think I hear them on my roof.
And I love ninjutsu, by the way. I do. I there's lots of really cool, cool stuff in it, but
you
I'm just bringing it up as a joke. Anyway.
Sure. It's okay. Screw them. I know, just kidding. The death touch, all that dip mock stuff. I mean, here's the thing. Like, okuden, traditionally, which would be hidden technique, now would be something like, is what we all know to be fact, like hitting the solar plexus, you know, a rear naked strangle. I mean, these things were used, you know, now, you know, back then, it's like, holy crap, he punched him in the stomach. What the hell did he do? Right, or he, you know, was able to strangle him, or able to knock him out with a side, of, you know, with a shot to the side of the neck. The other stuff, I mean, look at YouTube, right? Like the guys that, you know, there's places like there are, you know, there's places that are, you know, pressure points that hurt, that cause damage. You can do things like, you know, hitting the blood saturated organs like the liver, like the spleen, like the kidneys, to cause pain and discomfort and trauma, but it's not going to be the immediate effect that, you know, it's professed to be. There's no place on the body or that where you can tap somebody with a finger or flick them where they're going to die. We're just not built like that. None of the, you know, all of the stuff, I mean, hey, you know, I'm not going to see a phrenologist tomorrow, right? You know, I mean, we're not looking at the lumps on my head to determine.
I'm glad you explained that, because I had no freaking clue what a phrenologist.
Okay, sorry, man. I'm an ass at Trivial Pursuit. So anyway, you know, you know, it's, you know, they're not going to read the bumps on my head to determine my good fortune, right? I mean, it just that those days, those sciences are gone, and they don't work, and they didn't work, and the same type of thinking was developed in the martial arts. You know, again, for the same reasons that people do them today, to make money and to create, you know, a mystery. I mean, you know, where there's, you know, there's always an angle, right? Everybody's always working an angle. So, you know, martial artists, I mean, hell, you know, we're human beings. So, you know, these things get developed. And hell, I'd like to walk around thinking that, you know, I could, you know, I love that people think that I can touch them or look at them and they could die. Maybe, you know, after some garlic, you know, I could breathe on them, you know, yeah. But, you know, one thing you just have to ask yourself, you know, just to say to yourself, if it was what it was all cracked up to be, I mean, don't you think somewhere in a, you know, professional sports or, you know, somebody or, you know, along the line would have, you know, discovered this to be true with, you know, medical science to, you know, back it up, you know, yeah, I would think so. I mean, you know, people like, no, there's not something secret in the CIA that's doing this. You know, no, there's not, you know, there's not an ultimate, you know, Uber Ninja Special Forces group that knows how to do this stuff. No.
You don't know that.
Oh, yeah, I do. They don't. And you know it, too. So
I don't know that.
Stop it. Stop.
Let's go on to the next
one.
Let's go to the next one, because I'm not pissing off any CIA ninja group. You do that yourself, man. The next one is the nose to the brain, pushing somebody's nose up into their brain. Fact or fiction?
Fiction. Nose is cartilage. You know, you've seen a skull, and it's funny, because I put this stuff on, you know, our Facebook page, Martial Arts Self-Defense, and it was so funny because people were like, oh, I know a special forces guy that can do that. I'm like, no, you don't. You know, no, the nose, everybody's broken their nose. Have you seen a skull? That what's supposed to be broken off is just a tiny little ridge of nose. In order to do that, you've got to, you know, if you do that, and then to drive that into the brain is like, what is that? Like an inch and a half, 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, holy crap! There's going to be a lot more damage that's going to be done than that little piece of chipped bone going into your nose.
Yeah.
The cartilage breaks off. The skull would be compressed and caved in. So, that being said, yes, if you know your head went through your windshield, or somebody smashed you with a bat that caved in the front of your skull, oh, no doubt that little bit of bone would be in your brain, but so would the rest of the front of your skull. So I guess technically, yes, it could happen, but not like hitting somebody in their nose, because the cartilage.
You're not going to shove the nose up into the brain to scramble the brain.
We're not built like that. It's cartilage. It breaks off. It goes to the side. You know, it doesn't go like that.
Yeah. Okay, and the last one I'll throw out to you is actually off of something you said before. So I think a lot of people either think of the temple as like a death shot, that there's either a part of the skull that's very sensitive there, or pressure points or whatever. But the temple is often seen as, you know, if you get hit in the temple, you could die. So fact or fiction, what is it about the temple when it comes to life or death blows?
Fact, it's soft, and it allows easier access to the brain. So it has to be struck hard in order to cause swelling and, you know, and brain damage.
Okay.
That's as simple as it gets.
Yeah.
You know, the front of the skull is very hard. The top back of the skull is very hard. The base of the skull is it's a good target area. Again, the temple is an excellent target area. Another one that's not technically a good kill shot, but a really good target area is, of course, the ear, with an ear box. Or for some of you karate guys, you get some pretty interesting results when you reverse punch an ear. Disorientation, you know,
yeah.
Loss of balance. that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
And that's it.
I think those are the three main ones that I hear out there as far as myths or that I know of. But
you know, some of the other things, you know, while we're at it.
Yeah.
You know, like breaking, you know, things like breaking a knee, though, you know, it's not as easy as it is professed to be in the martial arts. You know, unless you're hitting it where the foot is anchored and, you know, let's say the heel is anchored and you're coming into it from, you know, the typical scenario is this. You're fighting, a guy throws a low side kick and he's like, oh yeah, knee's broken. In or about the area. Most of the times with the foot being pivotal, you can knock somebody down. They'll bend, they'll twist, they'll move, you know, but it's not going to, you know, shatter instantaneously. You know, and this is, you know, coming off a couple of knee injuries myself, I'm pretty familiar with how it falls apart.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of one of my, you know, pet peeves. I mean, it can be, you know, again, especially from behind, driving into the ground, smashing to the patella, you know, taking a steel tip to the tip of the knee, smashing the patella. But again, to get it, you know, that leg's got to be hyperextended, foot's got to be anchored, and then you've got to, you know, come in on that, you know, on that angle right against the joint. If not, it's just gonna the knee's gonna turn. Again,
yeah.
We'll knock a guy down, we'll bring him down to the ground, we'll open him up, we'll, you know, disrupt his balance, but not a fight ender. You know, and I think that's where we get, you know, again, we're building, you know, we got to be grounded in reality. And, you know, I mean, I like to say my tagline, you know, is just train honestly. It's like, okay, is this, you know, let's be honest with ourselves as much as possible. So, you know, trying to really kind of, you know, stay true to what we know to work and keep it as simple as possible. And not get impressed with ourselves too much, though it's hard at times.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, good stuff, man. There's lots of really good information here, I think, for a lot of people to take away from this. I mean, I think that, you know, and you know, a lot of people might be concerned with if I'm taking training and if I, you know, if I'm learning this stuff, if the police go through my house after I kill somebody and they find Damien Ross's Quick Kills DVD on my shelf, pretty much takes away my entire defense. But, you know, here's the way I look at it. Go ahead.
You can throw them out. I'll send you another copy.
Yeah, there you go.
Shit, man.
You know, the thing is that, and I think this is really important for people to understand, because I have, in security work I've done and things like that, I've seen, I worked in a high crime area with lots of really, really rough gangs. And I've seen gang attacks up close and personal. I've pulled them apart. And the thing is that the human body is extremely frail, and most people don't know what they're doing. Like, it's very easy to kill somebody accidentally.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I've seen gang members just stomping away on guys down on the ground and just kicking away at their head with steel-toed boots.
Yep.
Well, it doesn't take very much to be able to really kill somebody that way. So here's the thing. If you know how to kill, if you're trained and you know the points on the body that do kill, if you ever get in a fight, I'm not, you know, most of the time you're not going to be a life or death situation, you know, most likely if it's a bar brawl or something like that. But you can, if somebody ever says, well, you know, you take martial arts, then you know how, you know, you killed him on purpose, you're trained, you're a lethal weapon. It's like, no, I know how to kill, I know how not to kill. And I tried everything I could to be able to fend this person off. I tried, you know, whether it's an arm bar or whatever. But the point is here is that knowledge can be power. You know, knowledge is not a
burden.
Yeah, it's not a burden. It's more of, look, I did everything I could to not have to take this person's life or whatever it might be. So, you know, don't be afraid of training for this stuff, because it actually will make you so you don't actually, I mean, nobody wants to kill anybody, or you shouldn't want to. So,
you know,
this can actually help you know not to.
You know what I've noticed, the guys, most people who, you know, train in this stuff or, you know, have that, or just even train in general, they have more of a reluctancy to enter into a physical altercation, just because they kind of understand what's at stake.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, is it really worth it? Is a parking spot worth it? Not really, you know, because I know what happens is, again, you brought up another great point, which is, you know what, my intent may not have been to kill him. I mean, several years ago, there was a kid who was 17, he was at a party, and he got pushed, you know, and tripped and hit his head on concrete, and he's dead. The kid that pushed him didn't mean to do it. He was just pissed at him, and he pushed him. That doesn't make that poor kid any less dead. Still dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's something to be said. It's like, hey, listen, nobody has a right, you know, to put their hands on you, ever. You know, so,
right.
you know, take that for what it's worth. So, you know, there's not, you know, you'll say, well, you know, it, you know, in an accurate, you know, it's a bar brawl. So it's still, you know, I've been in somewhere, you know, it's dicey, you know, and you really, you know, the end of the day, it's like, you know, once it goes, whether it's, you know, lethal or not, it's like, no, I just was, again, I don't even think that ends up, that even has to sometimes come into the equation. You know, it's just like, I was just doing this to, you know, just protecting myself.
Right.
I know what you're saying, you know, as far as, you know, well, you should know better. Well, it's like, I do know better. And, you know, that was, at the end of the day, get a good attorney.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Know,
yeah.
I'm like, you know, if you're going to do this, and it doesn't matter, like you said even before, even doing what you would be considered like non-lethal techniques, again, with, you know, we can have a good debate on, you know, whether we're going to be doing an armbar as a civilian or not. But the, you know, even if you're doing those types of maneuvers, there still runs a risk of him hitting his head.
Sure.
There's still, you know, there's always, every time there's a physical altercation and there's violence involved, death is there.
Yeah, and in fact, I'd probably venture a guess, and it would just be a guess, but most of the deaths that happen because of fights are probably more accidental than anything.
Absolutely. You know, and, you know, they, most people, you know, again, are, I mean, there's good and bad in everybody, I guess, and, you know, most people are, you know, if asked, would, you know, there's two sides to everybody, you know, if we're going to have this conversation, you know, there's a, you know, people want to be good and the scumbag inside, right?
Yeah.
You know? So, and it depends on the situation of who you're going to get and what happens. Like you said, you know, you see these kids stomping anybody and they don't, you know, they're thinking about that they're going to kill the guy or they're just thinking about, oh, I just want to stomp the shit out of this kid.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, man, I don't care. Right, I just, you know, I'm
you
like,
care about
I'm going
home, kissing your kids on the forehead. Yeah,
that's it.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
it, and that's all that matters. I'll figure the rest of this shit out later.
Yeah, great stuff.
So,
Damien, I really, really, really appreciate. I know you're East Coast, it's like late for you, so I really appreciate you taking some time with us today and
no
going.
No problem. Thanks
stuff,
for having
so.
Me, man.
Yeah,
I love it. Anytime.
All right, cool. Hey, listen,
okay.
Everybody. Thanks so much for joining us live. Definitely go out and check. You definitely need to go and check out this training, and you can go to Damien's website, and you'll be able to see a lot of these. Like, there's some explanation of each one of the training modules, but there's some great stuff here. I've been a big fan of Damien's stuff for many, many years now. It's really hardcore. It's very, very straight up, effective. I definitely need to check it out. All you need to do is go over and check out his website at www.selfdefensetrainingsystem.com. And you can go ahead and get your first trial package there for free. Check it out. That's what's going to show you that this is very different than the other stuff that's out there. So
and Jeff, if you would, along with that, you know, we've got the training form, which all connects through the site. You see, it's the Facebook fan page. I mean, we're out. I'm interacting. You know, we've got, you know, training seminars coming up in August, and you know, all connected with that stuff. And there's a, you know, global network of people that you'll be hooked into as well.
Yeah. Cool.
So, it's all
cool, man.
Again, I appreciate
all right, listen,
it.
Everybody.
So
thanks so much for joining us tonight. Really great information. I hope you got a lot out of this. I know I did. So, listen, go and actually apply it. Go do something. So, So, I mean, well, don't go out and kill somebody.
Unless you, well, whatever. Here we go.
That was bad advice, yeah. Don't go kill anybody.
Kill them with kindness, Jeff.
Kill them with kindness. All right, listen, everybody, until the next training session from the ISCQC, train hard and stay safe.